Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello, welcome back to the show. Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Good, Peter. How are you doing?
All right. Frigid, frozen,
boy.
Cold, but all right.
Oh, I agree. Absolutely. 5 degrees this morning when I woke up, and it's only going to reach a balmy 25 by the end of the day.
Wow, I had some errands to run, and I was like, well, I'll wait till it warms up. And then I looked at the weather. It's like, it's not going to. It's just got to do it.
I know. I wait till spring.
Yeah, I'll do my errands and gets above 50 again.
Yeah. I hope that groundhog does something for us here coming up to get rid of this cold.
When's that guy doing his thing? When is that?
February 2nd.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Yeah, it's super cold. It's not getting above like 20 here in New York. And then with the wind chill, it's like the real feel has been 5.
Like, oh, yeah.
When you can count the digits on one hand, like, you know.
If you keep those digits out there too long, you won't have any digits left on one hand.
Yeah, I don't know why. Like, I guess because the past few winters in New York, they've been cold, but like, I run outside a lot. And when I run, I can run down to like 25 fine. Like, once I get started, you know, I wear gloves. I have like good Under Armour stuff, but like, I can run in pretty cold weather. It doesn't bother me. And I went out for a run the other day, and I'm like, this isn't good. Like, I'm uncomfortable. What's wrong with me? I assumed it was my body breaking down on me because I'm old. And I, like, on my way back, I was like, well, I'm just going to walk to the gym and, like, run on a treadmill. I was like, I wonder what the temperature is. It was, like, 8. I'm like, this is why.
I have a policy. I don't voluntarily go outside unless it's 40 or above.
Yeah, I'm good to like 30, like I you know, but after that, I just no, not.
I think I'm old.
Point, it's bad for you actually. Like, it's not like, yeah. Oh, you know, rough it out. It's good for you.
I'm old. That cold gets into my bones.
Yeah, well, it's like hard on your lungs to breathe the frozen air for extended periods of time.
Well, and remember, I got 2 metal knees. I don't want those metal knees to ice up inside there. That'd be bad.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They can get cold.
That's right. That's cold steel.
Well, you know, I thought to combat the brutal cold, we could maybe go on a little vacation in the mind to a spirit that's made in warmer environments.
Oh, any excuse to think about warmer environments is good.
This is not at all a seasonal. Well, there is some seasonal appropriateness to this, which I'll get into. But this is not quite a seasonally appropriate ingredient, but it's a good little vacation. I thought we could talk about Pisco today.
Pisco?
Yes. Now, have you ever had or heard of Pisco, Dad?
I have never even heard of it. When you first mentioned it as a topic, Pisco, the only thing that came to mind for me was Joe Piscopo. That was about as close as I could get to it. And he, of course, was a big star on Saturday Night Live for a period of time, like when Eddie Murphy was on there. And then you never heard from him again after that. He just disappeared after Saturday Night Live. I don't know. He became a bodybuilder or something and disappeared.
Well, he's not the namesake for Pisco. So that is,
oh, okay.
He didn't go and make a Peruvian/Chilean spirit after that.
Oh, all right. Well, I say that's all. That's where my mind went, was Joe Piscopo. That was as close as I could get.
Well, okay. So obviously, first up, just, you know, for anyone that doesn't know what Pisco is, what is it? It is simply a distilled spirit made from grapes. So sort of a brandy, you know, that's same base distillate. But it is usually unaged. It is produced in the winemaking regions of Chile and Peru. And it is made with a pretty classic process. You know, you take wine grapes, There are different varietals depending on where it's made that it can be made from. Those are controlled. You know, there's like 8 types that it can be made from in Peru, 14, I think, that it can be made from in Chile. But you take these wine grapes, you harvest and press both the juice and the skins. You let those ferment together in a few days. It's just distilled in copper pots. And then it's usually rested for 4 months and then bottled, but not aged. This process is often done with the aid of traditional, like, grape stomping, you know, like the old school image you get in your head where you smoosh all the grapes, and then that's like that open air fermentation happens. So you've got the yeast coming in from, settles on the grape skin, is in the atmosphere, that leads to the fermentation. So it's a very bare bones natural process.
They say that resting process has to take place in like glass jars or clay jugs or something like that, because they said cognac is made by oak, but pisco is made by God.
Yeah, well, that's the big, like, it's hard to really compare it to, even though, like, they're both grape distillates, you really can't compare it to, like, brandy or cognac for that reason, that the oak and the wood is such a big part of the characteristic of cognac. And pisco, not across the board, forbids it, but classic pisco and most pisco is absolutely unaged, just rested. And the end product is usually around 80 proof, so that's standard for a base spirit. You know, that's similar to most of your well spirits. It's typically clear, and flavor-wise, it's usually pretty clean, crisp. It has notes that can range from, like, light perfumey florals, fruits and herbs, sometimes some warm sort of spicy vanilla notes. It's hard to compare it to something that you might have had before. I mean, some people compare it to, like, grappa, you know, Italian spirit that's usually unaged, and it's made from, like, the leftover sort of winemaking. It's not the juice, but it's everything else. It's the stems and skins and everything. But it's not really the same. Some people even compare it to tequila in that they're both earthy, they're both floral, they have sort of a similar level of, like, sweetness to them. But I think by and large, like, my experience with pisco is it's its own thing.
Well, and it can be heavily influenced by the type of grape that's used to make it, because it has strict laws governing what can be called pisco too. And you're not allowed to add things to it for flavoring or anything. And even the alcohol, you have to distill it at that alcohol level. You can't cut it with water to lower the alcohol level or anything. Yeah. And so the specific type of grape you use is really what influences the taste the most.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's really like a lot of these sort of base spirits that we talk about. You know, we talked about rum, we talked about how different it can be based on how it's made and how it's stored. And like, pisco is very much the same, where if you've tried one random pisco, that does not mean you know what all pisco tastes like, because there is a massive difference between Chilean pisco and Peruvian pisco. We'll get into all that, because that's a huge part of the story. But even within those areas, there's regional differences and there's stylistic differences. So like any other spirit, really, when you get down to it, there's a whole bunch of expressions, a whole lot of different takes on it, different variables that can make it a really unique category to explore. And I love pisco. I if you haven't had it before, it's not one of those spirits that's so aggressive that you know, might be for you, might not be. I think pisco is pretty palatable across the board, but you know.
Well, it kind of strikes me as like a Genever type thing, because I like Genever better than gin. And I'm thinking that this might be better than, like, cognac or something that I'm not really a big fan of.
Well, I think I would say, because I do know you like tequila, I think that you would like pisco, because I think that there is that, and it's funny because there's nothing, like, ingredient-wise similar between tequila and pisco, but the earthiness, the sort of light floral qualities, the little bit of, like, kind of, I don't know, like, herbaceousness, there's a lot of flavor notes that are similar, and then this sort of similar level of, like, sweetness. So I do think, like, in the spirits that you've liked before, it's not, like, aggressively botanical like gin, you know? It's not very, like, heavily oaked or woody, like, I mean, obviously there's no wood involved, but
right.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like Pisco. And it's got some, it's got a lot of history.
A lot. Yeah. I was surprised.
So Pisco finds its roots, some pun intended, because, you know, it's wine-based, grape plants, roots. anyway, it goes back to the Spanish conquistadors when they invaded Peru in, like, 1532. So the Spanish at the time were very much into wine, still are, but they brought wine with them wherever they went. It was not enough to meet the demands of the growing settlement they created, so they looked into growing wine in this region. And this wasn't a new thing for them. Spanish invaders had tried growing wine grapes in a lot of their viceroyalties to really limited success. In other places, they'd really only found enough yield to support, like wine for the church, you know, like communion wine needs. So not really a success story anywhere else in the world, but in the very specific climate of this area of South America, they found great success. You know, they had this plentiful coastal water. They had these, you know, lovely valleys with lots of, like, kind of dry air and very rich soil. And the grapes that they imported from the Canary Islands, they, over, you know, a couple decades to sort of adjust to the new climate, they began to flourish. And so they had enough wine, not just for their needs for the settlement, not just for their needs for the church, but even for, like, commercial purposes, they had enough wine. So the Jesuit priests, which were the ones who were handling the winemaking at that time, would harvest the bulk of the grapes, but then they give a portion to the local villagers to sort of do with as they pleased. So the villagers would ferment and distill the grapes into what they called aguardiente, a.k.a. fire water. And this would become the sort of godfather, the sort of precursor to Pisco.
So, okay.
Now, there are two sort of concurrent situations that would lead to the spread of what would eventually be dubbed Pisco. So you had this distilled spirit that was popular with the villagers, but then it also became associated with the areas that in South America that were producing wine and grapes at the time. Specifically the town of Santa Maria Magdalena, which was founded in 1572 in the Pisco Valley. It was already named the Pisco Valley. And they named their port after that valley, so it was the Port of Pisco. So sailors from around the world would stop in, and they would try this, you know, local distilled spirit and develop a taste for it, and they would just refer to it as Pisco because they'd had it in the Port of Pisco. So the name Pisco became associated with the drink itself. And before long, people up and down the South American coast, as well as Europe, were aware of it. They liked it. They were trying to import it. Now, along this same timeline, mainland Spain was getting a little annoyed at the success of the growing wine market that this region was producing. So they began restricting the export sales that could compete with their own. You know, they didn't want these, you know, colonies in South America to compete with their wine. So they were trying to restrict it. And that it just made more sense for the growers in that area to start making Pisco that didn't have a challenge against the Spanish crown. So the vineyards just shifted their focus. And
they said, this is a different product. Yeah. We're not competing with you. This is Pisco. This isn't wine. So, you know, Spaniards, leave us alone.
Exactly. You can make all the wine fine, you know, but here we have a whole original product. And by the late 1700s, 90% of the wine grapes grown in Pisco and the Ica Valley was also really important at this time. But they were all going into Pisco. So a lot of the wine growers, outside of just locally produced and consumed wine, anything export was largely just Pisco. Now, outside of this region, Pisco in North America, it took a while to catch on. It was more like the 1830s, and kind of started in San Francisco, which made sense. It just sort of went up the coast, and it eventually worked its way over into, like, New York cocktailers, but this is where we get, like, popular cocktail builds catching on, like the Pisco Sour. It's often associated with the gold rush in San Francisco, because Pisco was, by a lot of accounts, the most popular drink around, like, the 1870s in San Francisco. And it was also a very expensive drink. It would go for as much as 25 cents a glass, which was expensive at the time. it was sort of like a celebratory luxury spirit at the time. The famous bank exchange in San Francisco produced the Pisco Punch, which was one of the first big hit Pisco cocktails, which is like Pisco, lemon, and a pineapple syrup, which was so renowned that in 1889, Rudyard Kipling described the taste as shavings of cherub's wings, the glory of a tropical dawn, red clouds of sunset, and fragments of lost epics by dead poets.
Wow, that's pretty good, words about it.
Yeah. So Pisco was very big, but its heyday wouldn't last through the next turn of the century. There were a couple of mounting factors. There was a lot of like civil unrest and going on in South America. The Spanish crown also allowed rum to be produced in the region in the late 18th century, which was cheaper to make, cheaper to drink, so that cut into Pisco's market. There were, in the 19th century, you had, you know, the increasing demands of industrialization, so growing cotton made a lot more sense than growing grapes for Pisco, so a lot of these vineyards switched over to cotton places, and all of these things sort of factored into Pisco drying up in Peru, but around that same time, somewhere else started making Pisco. So in the 1900s, you have the Chilean production gets underway, and this is why we have this sort of dual countries claiming to be the origin of Pisco. So in like 1931, the Chilean government obtained a denomination of origin, a DO, and this is basically just means we make this thing, it's our thing. And they obtained this to produce Pisco. They even, like in 1936, renamed the town of La Union to Pisco. So Pisco, Chile exists, and that sort of backed up their claim over the name Pisco. Now, this is really one of the, you know, central, not really debates. I think everybody sort of settled on where Pisco, at least document-wise, started.
Mm-hmm.
But there are these dual claims to Pisco's origin from Peru and Chile. And this sort of gets into the word Pisco itself, which I think is kind of the through line into the facts of the matter.
Well, that's true.
So the Peru's namesake of the Pisco Valley dates back to when the Incans arrived in the region. There was a large number of birds living in that area, and they called it Pisco, which means small bird in their language. So that's where that Pisco Valley gets its name from, around like 1450. Now, Pisco Chile, as I said, was established much later, and that was really more from just establishing an identity as this is a place where we're making Pisco. So the name comes from the spirit that was already known. Now there is this conflicting claim that, well, Pisco also was a name for clay pots before that. So the village or the town is named after the clay pots that you store Pisco in. But also likely is that the clay pots that you often store Pisco in began called Pisco because that's what they were used for.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think one of the biggest evidence that Peru makes the better Pisco is that Chile is the number one importer of Pisco from Peru.
That is true. Now, I don't know if it makes better is subjective. Like, that's, you know, that's a matter of taste. Peru, to this day, is still now it's the bigger producer of Pisco. There was this period of time where Chile was the bigger player in the Pisco market.
Right.
And I mean, and it's also arguable whether or not at the same time that you had people in Peru making, you know, the original, the aguardiente, and then calling it Pisco, that the same thing was happening in Chile was possible. You know, it's not to say that Chile wasn't making a distilled grape-based spirit. It's not to say that they already had they had that distillation technology. They had grape crops. So it is possible that they were making something at the same time that is kind of the same thing. It's just that the paper trail, as far as when was something called Pisco, where did that come from, all goes back to Peru. So
right. And you know, I don't know how much they actually knew this from a scientific standpoint or how much of it was luck, but that valley that they started growing those grapes in for it had like a natural greenhouse effect that the cold coastal waters coming up from Antarctica and the Andes Mountains to the east made the area largely devoid of clouds and rain, and it was perfect for developing an extremely sweet grape. That the Pisco grapes have a sugar content measured at 24.5 bricks, which I guess that's a measurement for the sweetness of grapes, which apparently is a high one. And generally, they're so sweet that you wouldn't want to eat more than a few at a time, they said. And that inherent sweetness is essential because Pisco, by law, can only be distilled once in the copper pot still, and it's all made possible with that unique Peruvian climate.
Yeah. Well, and that is Peruvian Pisco that can only be distilled once.
Right.
Well, and I think a case can be made for the fact that, like, all right, so by the 1900s, Peruvian Pisco had kind of just suffered all of these setbacks. It was largely not being produced. And then, you know, Chile kind of picked up the name, kept it going. And then you really don't have until the late 90s, like 1990s, that Peru kind of had this resurgence on the world stage. You know, you had a lot of distillers reestablish themselves. They claimed their own DO, their own denomination of origin. So, you know, I mean, had Chile not kept Pisco relevant, would it have been such a market that Peru could have entered back into? I think you could make that argument. Like, I don't think it's
sure.
I don't think it's one versus the other for me, because at the end of the day, what we do have is both Peru and Chile making excellent Pisco with a lot of, like, rules and quality standards that they have to follow. They're very different. You know, I think if you like the category, you'll enjoy things from both. But there are differences. You've touched on a few. I mean, like, in Peru, it has to be made from in one of the five, like, recognized Pisco regions. It cannot be aged in wood. It has to be distilled to proof and only once. So that means you can't add water to it. It's got to be within the range of proof, and that's it. No additives to affect anything, taste or alcohol. And it has differences of sort of styles. So, like, there's, like, Puro, which is made from a single varietal of grape. There's Aromaticas, which are made from Muscat or Muscat-derived grape varietals. And there's, like, Mosto Verde or Green Must, which is distilled from partially fermented must. This has to be distilled before the fermentation process is completely transformed. The sugar's into alcohol, so it's a little brighter. So they have, like, different... Their styles are more based on how it's made, like, what grapes go into it. And then, like, in Chilean Pisco, it does not need to be distilled to proof, and it can be distilled multiple times. It can be aged in wood, so if you actually like a bit of a barrel taste on your spirits, Chilean Pisco will offer that to you. It has a wider range of grapes it can be made from. They've got 14 different varietals that they make their Pisco from. And their groupings are more about alcohol percentage. So they're separated by what that proof ends up to be. Anywhere from 60 to 70 proof, upwards of like 86 or more proof. So, you know, while Peru does produce most of the world's Pisco and does have older ties to production, they're just making different styles, different expressions, and keeping the craft alive in different ways.
Yeah, well, I think Peru probably tried to do with Pisco the way Kentucky did with bourbon and set those very stringent rules to basically, here's what we have that nobody else has, and here's how we do it. And, you know, you can do that here, but you can't do it other places. They try to corner the market on it, I guess, maybe, and cut the Chileans back out of it. But so the Chileans said, okay, fine. You all can do that, but we're our own country. We can do what we want to do.
Well, that's true. And they do. It's funny because they both, you can find Chilean Pisco in Peru and Peruvian Pisco in Chile, but they're not allowed to be called Pisco in each other's countries. Outside the European Union, like here in America, you will find import products from Chile and Peru that are both called Pisco because that's allowed in most of the world. But in those two countries, Chilean Pisco cannot be called Pisco in Peru, but it is imported. Peruvian Pisco cannot be called Pisco in Chile, but it is imported. So, you know, it's just funny rules. But I don't think it's really a case of like one is. There will definitely be arguments on both sides that say one is better than the other. As as somebody that is not from either country and respects craftsmanship in any case, I don't have a preference. I've tried them from both, and I just like pisco. So, you know, I like aged pisco. I like unaged pisco. I like sweeter pisco. I like more vegetal pisco.
Well, you know, everybody has different tastes, so naturally, whatever your varieties are from the different ones, that you're gonna have people that'll come down on the side of all the different, you know, all the different choices.
Yeah. Well, and then that's ultimately the joy of it, is that, you know, it's not necessarily two conflicting points of origin. As I mentioned, at this point, historians are pretty sure we know where it came from first, or at least where it was documented first, and definitely that Peru was responsible for it being popular outside of South America in the 1700s, 1800s, but that Chile has developed its own unique styles and takes on it. And they also, both countries celebrate it uniquely. They both have national holidays. There's Pisco Day in Peru, which is the fourth Sunday of July. There's Pisco Sour Day, also in Peru, which is the first Saturday of February. And there's also a Pisco Day in Chile, which is February 8th. So I guess there's a couple holidays you can celebrate coming up.
There you go. If you like pisco, you got 3 days to drink it on.
Yeah, well, you gotta wait till July for Pisco Day in Peru. But
well, that's true, yeah.
Chilean Pisco Day and Peruvian Pisco Sour Day in the same month. So get a bottle of pisco at the beginning of February and enjoy it for a couple weeks.
Well, I'm just assuming since a whiskey sour is my favorite mixed drink, that a pisco sour would enjoy that too.
Well, you know, I mentioned the pisco sour briefly, and it is, I think, in my time behind the bar, that is the only pisco cocktail that wasn't a menu, a house-made cocktail that has been requested to me just as a call drink from a customer. And I mean, it is I think, you know, I think for the fact that you like whiskey sours, you like margaritas, you'd absolutely like a pisco sour. But it honestly has the barman that created it has a history all its own. I thought about including that in this episode. I'm like, well, we could probably get a whole episode out of the pisco sour. So you know, we've got Pisco Sour Day coming up next month. We'll revisit Pisco again.
Oh, there you go. There's a preview to coming attractions.
Yeah, can look forward to that. But in any case, I don't know. I think Pisco is a cool spirit. It's got obviously a lot of history behind it. It's very approachable. Some people are afraid of just a base spirit they're not familiar with, but it's really, as much as it is unique, it's incredibly, incredibly enjoyable, incredibly easy drinking. It does have, it's not sweet. I think a lot of people are worried when they hear the word sweet associated with a spirit. It's not sweet, it's just very smooth.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's smooth, it's floral, it's fruity. It works great with, in lots of you can get a pisco that fits for a stirred and strong style. You can get lighter piscos that fit really well for shaken and tropical or fruity drinks. It's really versatile depending on where your pisco is sourced from. So it's worth checking out. And if you've tried one pisco in your life, you're like, oh, maybe I'm not into pisco. Then much like a lot of these spirits, you know, when we talk about rum, we talk about whiskey, really any spirit. If you've tried one, probably you haven't tried enough to have a strong opinion about it.
Well, it's like bourbon. Bourbon has the specific rules, and it's just because you've had one bourbon doesn't mean you've had them all. They can vary greatly.
Well, and I would even say to compare it to bourbon, it's more like whiskey. When I say whiskey, that means a lot of things, right? That means
right.
Scotch, that means rye, that means bourbon, you know. That means single malt, that means blended. There's a lot that can be considered under the whiskey umbrella.
Right.
And likewise, when we're talking about Pisco, because you have two different countries making it to their own, DO, they have completely different guidelines, completely different grapes, completely different aging processes, or not aging processes, depending on where you're getting it from. So there's just that much variance in Pisco. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I look forward to trying to find me a bottle.
So we'll definitely we'll have a pisco video up for you soon. We'll be making some pisco sours, maybe some pisco punch. Our videos are going to be going exclusive to our Patreon. They are coming back if you've missed them, but they are going to be exclusive to our Patreon, which you can join for $1 a month. So it's, you know, if you want to check out our videos, not a high entry cost, but we will be trying out some pisco, and we will be revisiting pisco in February to celebrate Pisco Sour Day and Chilean Pisco Day. So, you know, we're going to hit both.
There you go.
We'll do a head-to-head. Get some Peruvian Pisco and some Chilean Pisco. Although not a head-to-head, because, once again, it's not about better or worse. It's just preference.
It's not a competition.
Exactly. Aren't we lucky to have a bunch of people enthusiastically making good Pisco for us to consume?
All different kinds for all different palates.
Yep. Absolutely. And as always, if you're a fan of Pisco, if this is a spirit that you are familiar with and you enjoy, please let us know. Let us know how you like to drink it. You know, in the mixing world, I think we're kind of Pisco Sour, Pisco Punch. Those are the call drinks, so the things you might hear about. But I'm always excited to hear somebody that has their way to drink a spirit that maybe not everybody's familiar with. If you want to reach out to us about that, well, you could email us at neatthebooscast@gmail.com. You can find us on socials at neatboozcast on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to have a discussion about Pisco with people,
Neat the Boozcast group on Facebook.
There you go.
We have some good content coming in there. Our Nochino got quite a response. We had several people sending in where they had Watershed Distillery should thank us because they've had an increase in business, people ordering Nochino from them. And so far, it's all been very favorable responses. Of course, I guess maybe people that got it that didn't like it didn't want to write in and sound negative. So,
well, that'd be, yeah. But I mean, that bottle that you sent to me, I finished just the other day. And I was like, oh, man. I mean, I know I can get Nochino. I mean, there are a couple places that sell different varieties, but I specifically want that one again.
It's good, isn't it? It is. Good. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, yeah. And as mentioned, if you want to check out our Patreon, starting in February, our videos are going to be exclusive to our patrons, but they are just $1 a month to watch all of the new videos, and there's a bounty of free videos still available on our YouTube, so check that out. And if you join at a higher level, you get stickers, you get coasters, you get all sorts of fun rewards. So if you're interested, we appreciate you if you want to check that out. But in any case, thank you so much for listening.
Absolutely. We enjoy having all of you.
Thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Tater, for having me. I always learn something. I learned about Joe Piscopo here, and I didn't even know about it. So.
Okay, I guess if you want to create an original Pisco cocktail and call it a Joe Piscopo, I guess we got our name right there.
There you go. That's what I would do.
Was there like a character that he did on SNL that you specifically enjoyed?
Well, he actually, calling back to our Rat Pack, he actually did like I guess he was like Frank Sinatra. Oh, really? Yeah, he did a Frank Sinatra imitation a lot. So.
And find a way to combine Pisco and Amontillado. I don't know.
Yeah, something like that. Or like their drinks that we talked about with the Rat Pack. Maybe substitute Pisco in there for one of them and call it that.
Yeah.
Pisco
could work in a couple of those drinks.
Sure. There you go.
All right. Well, once again, thank you all for joining us. You're much appreciated. Cheers to you all. I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been...
me... I don't know. Our Joe Piscopo drink. Pisco drink. Pisco po. Pisco. You have to make a difference how you... You have to be careful how you say that. Pisco drink. That wouldn't sound very palatable at all.